pools are flowing out like endless rain. Another blog posts up, surprise me while they pass, they slip away. Across the web of verse, pools of sorrow from keeping up are drifting through the web dev world, possessing and depressing us. Our current tool chain's life is up. Every week there's a new one. Every week there's a new one. Every week there's a new one. Tuesday is here, let's start the fun.
I really like that one. It was a good one. The Beatles are good.
Me too. It's very relaxed.
Welcome to Tools Day, a podcast about tech tools, tips, and tricks. Every other Tuesday, probably around 2, but we're not sure about the time anymore. My name is Yuna. I'm your co-host.
And I'm Chris, the other co-host.
And today we're talking about serverless functions. Woo! Before we get into serverless functions, we do have a sponsor today. Our sponsor is Datadog. Datadog is a software as a service-based monitoring platform that provides development and operations teams with unified view of all their systems, apps, and services. You'll be a part of thousands of organizations who already rely on Datadog to collect, visualize, and alert them of abnormalities. There are 200-plus turnkey integrations, including AWS, Postgres, Kubernetes, and Slack, all done out of the box with custom metrics to gain full-stack observability with a unified view of all their systems, apps, and services. Key features include real-time visibility from customizable dashboards, algorithmic alerts for anomaly detection, outlier detection, forecasting alerts, etc., end-to-end request tracing to visualize app performance, and real-time collaboration. So Datadog is offering listeners a free trial, and as an added bonus for signing up and creating a dashboard, they'll send you a free t-shirt. So start a free trial today at datadog.com/toolsday. That's datadog.com/toolsday. So sign up there and they'll send you a free t-shirt. Again, that's datadog.com/toolsday. Thank you so much for sponsoring Datadog, and check them out.
I will say also, if you're monitoring things across the entire stack, so you want to see your server, your application, a couple different things, tools like Datadog are really invaluable to seeing the overall picture and health of your application. So just another reason to check out Datadog.
Yeah, because you're probably monitoring different pieces by themselves anyway. So
yeah.
Let's talk about serverless functions.
All right. Okay. So we got into this because of a great blog post by Sarah Drasner. Talking about Azure and Stripe.
Yeah. She basically had a four article blog series that we'll add in our show notes on CSS tricks, where she went through making a view-based website that used Stripe and also Azure serverless functions to create an online store. And it was like really well designed. So we were both kind of just talking about what we wanted to discuss on Tools Day, and we both saw this blog post and wanted to try it. So we're thinking about serverless functions and e-commerce, and so that kind of kicked off this whole journey for us, this search for serverless.
Yeah, so could you explain what is serverless, Yuna?
So serverless is kind of like a misnomer of a word. It's trendy to say serverless, but really I prefer saying serverless functions because it's more specific. Serverless just means functions as a service. So instead of maintaining a server yourself, which could be annoying, like we just had the Tools Day site go down the other day because of a server reboot that was like not in our end, but then we had to go and deal with it. With serverless functions, all you have to do is pay for the functionality that you use. So if you're running an algorithm or a mutation or a post to a form or any kind of discussion between two different servers, you don't actually have to run a server yourself. You can just use the serverless function to do it for you and then to just charge you for the amount used, which is great. So that's kind of why we're seeing a lot of examples with e-commerce now, because you don't have to maintain a server. You can maintain a static, quote-unquote, front end, and then hook it up.
I had a really hard time visualizing this for a long time until I went through Sarah's tutorial. And so, like, I guess for me as a front-end developer, I was like, when would I actually use a serverless function? I can, you know, spin up a node server and blah, blah, blah. And really, to me, serverless, the movement is about the developer experience, right? So I'm a front-end developer. So most of the time, I just want to build my React app or whatever application. And I want to pull in some data from a database that I don't really want to use, but I have to because, you know, it's an application. So I spin up a node layer. And, you know, spin up an API and blah, blah, blah. And then I, you know, have to talk to a database somewhere. And really, the only reason I have this node layer is to call my database. And so why not just do it in a function, really? And that's kind of, I guess, the appeal of serverless is that instead of doing all this random stuff just to call something, you just drop that function into a server somewhere.
Exactly. It's like renting instead of owning, right?
Maybe it's a bad analogy because most people still want to own. But
well, I don't know. If you don't really want to own like really expensive jewelry, like you don't want to own like a $30 million necklace to wear to an event one time when you can rent it for $150 for like a couple hours.
I'm thinking of the Parks and Rec clothing example. Anyways, okay.
Speaking of clothing, e-commerce. So we thought to really give context to serverless, we would match it up with e-commerce just like in this article, and then we continue to do some other research. So how was your experience going through the blog post?
So I had a couple different takeaways from the blog post. I went into it thinking a little bit more on it would walk me through the Vue side as well as of integrating the serverless function with an application, but it's a little bit more hand-wavy at that point. Sarah takes you through setting up Azure, setting up a Stripe API, and then you kind of just plug it into a pre-built app at the end. But one thing for me was that I have never used Stripe API before, and so I ran into a couple problems there where I've never done e-commerce before.
They just updated their API too.
They just updated the API, and I've never done e-commerce before, so there's a mention in the article about, hey, use the token, a Stripe token for a transaction. And it took me a good like 20 to 30 minutes. Like, okay, I have my Stripe API token. Is that the token I'm actually using right now? And no, it's actually every Visa or every kind of credit card transaction has a token. And there are test tokens for that transaction. And it's just like this string you can use for everything. And so when you're trying to create e-commerce APIs as opposed to using an actual e-commerce transaction, use these test tokens. And that was something that tripped me up. So
yeah, same, actually. Yeah. I had to like Google the beginning string of what the token should look like based on the image that was provided as a snapshot.
I did something similar.
But I found
also,
it.
Yeah, something that tripped me up was that Azure, so tutorial uses Azure's functions, which is Azure's serverless application, I guess. And I didn't know how to include a NPM module inside my function. And it took a lot of Googling and went to a really weird place. And then I finally got to NPM and NPM install inside of this Linux box, more or less, that represents your function.
Same. Like, there was this one point where you kind of had to do some sleuthing and log into your Azure system. And you could do it through the web, like there's a web interface. But yeah, I got this error that like Stripe was not a recognizable component because it was required.
Yeah.
And so there are like a little parts of the blog that are missing. Maybe I'll just chat with Sarah and be like, yo, add this little line here.
Yeah.
But it was nice because it showed you how to set things up in Azure, which is a very complicated system. Like the Microsoft Cloud is complex. We have both worked on cloud systems. They're complex things to disseminate, and there's just 1,000 buttons and options. So she highlights like what you should click on. I feel like that's a design problem that we're still working on solving. I think Dio does it best, but we have a lot less functionality there than I don't know why I'm saying we. I don't work there anymore. But
I mean, I still say we for IBM. But it was still a good introduction to how Azure treats serverless. There are, of course, other providers. So famously, AWS Lambda is the most I think, well-known serverless provider. They were the first ones to kind of kick it off. So, and there's IBM Bluemix, which has something called Functions as well. It used to be called OpenWhisk or Whisk. It was recently renamed Functions.
Good.
All these things kind of, yeah, go ahead.
And I was going to say that in the blog, Sarah also mentions it's like FaaS, Functions as a Service, is a much better name for it. I do also want to sort of mention that all of these different websites and products have the same sort of functionality with Functions as a Service because it is just customizable. You go in there, you write your query, you link it up, and you write your environment variables. But the setup is like very UI heavy. Like you have to do that. So having someone walk you through how to use the UI, a complex UI, is great. So that was, I think that's what I mostly got out of the tutorial because I also had issues with Stripe integration. They just updated their API. So I ended up doing other tutorials later also just to like work with serverless and Stripe to see how it compared. And I ran into some issues because name and type, like this is updated last week. So the docs were even like not up to date on Stripe. But in the comments, there's always people answering your questions.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so what else did you try with serverless after the tutorial?
So I looked up a few different other tutorials. One that I found was by Remy Sharp, and he just did a blog post about Stripe integration that I found really handy because, like you said, I also don't have experience with e-commerce, so it kind of explains to you what the different credit card fields are and what the accounts are and like taxes and stuff like that. So if you were actually to do this, I'm going to link Remy's tutorial in the notes. And then I also found this blog post called Build a Serverless Stripe Store in 5 minutes with Node.js and Standard Lib, STDLIB, Standard Lib, by Keith Horwood.
And so what is Standard Lib?
Okay, so yeah, I didn't know what Standard Lib was either, but it's truly what it says. Like the blog post was really easy to follow. And they basically provide a standardization, a standard library for the web is what they're calling it, where they use serverless web functions and provide boilerplates essentially to create these experiences for you. So they have like Twilio, they have Slack bots, they have Stripe, anything you can use serverless for, they provide their service on top of, and you get like $5 your free account. Oh, it's important to mention like Azure gets $200 free account, AWS also gets a free account. There's like free tiers, but then after that you have to pay. Yeah. With Standard Lib, you basically just put the money in that you would need for your serverless bill, and they use it up. So it was really nice. Like you can do for Alexa skills, Vue. I just set up this 5-minute store, and they show you the different parts of it. They took you through the literally the package, like the products, and I had it up and running in 5 minutes. It was really great. Okay, I'm going to asterisk that. If the API hadn't changed, I would have had it running in 5 minutes. But because the API changed, I got a bunch of errors. I got like, you must submit a type with your product. So then I went and I Googled and I was like, okay, type is new. I better add type. And then when I submitted that, it was like unknown field type. And I was like, it was driving me nuts.
Yeah.
And I checked anyway, I got it working. I ended up adding it, removing the rest of the product. So it was only sending one so it wouldn't error out. After, and I got 200s, and then my store was up and running. So it was cool to see that. It definitely is opinionated. It's providing it for you. But if you're working with all of these things the first time, if you just want a Stripe-powered store, I thought this was great because it just kind of – everything is pretty well commented, so you know what the code is doing. Yeah. And you just basically get a – integration in 5 minutes.
Yeah, so I'm kind of messing around with Standard Lib right now. So, you know, you can look at it. You can kind of look at functions as if this then that, except for APIs, right?
Yeah, it's a customized if this then that. You use JavaScript or C or whatever language you want to write in to create these queries, these post and get.
Yeah, and so if I just like kind of go to the top, you can kind of search around for different solutions and things and just pick the one that actually makes sense for you. So if I just type in Slack in the function, you get a bunch of different Slack things that people have built, although the descriptions are not 100% amazing, so you'll have to kind of Google around a bit, I think.
There's AppScale. There's serverless.com. What is this?
Serverless is
a toolkit.
Yeah, I ran in serverless.com kind of halfway through this, which is just a, it's a way for deploying serverless architectures. And so for like AWS, Azure, and WISC, IBM WISC, you can upload the code onto anywhere. So you kind of use the UI, which is like, Sarah Drasher's example, right? In the beginning part, you just use the UI, but then she asked you to clone it down because you can actually just link a GitHub repository to, you know, any of these serverless services. So you don't have to use their UI. You don't have to use it at all.
That's really nice.
The only thing you have to use it for is to actually link up your Git repo and say, hey, I want you to look at this and pull the code from here, because, you know, I as a developer, I have very particular needs about my editor. And I can't stand writing code inside of a browser. So
yeah, me too. It was really annoying.
Yeah,
my favorite part of it was hooking up the GitHub repo, and then you saw all the commits, and it was cool to see that.
Yeah. So serverless, I guess, is a way. So if you're trying to do all the stuff by yourself under a computer, this lets you create a template real quick, and then you say deploy to a specific server to provider. It's kind of like if you've used Heroku or Bluemix or even AWS, the same kind of CLI tool chain to kind of kickstart this process.
So it's like the Heroku, but you can still use Azure or Bluemix or any other cloud provider.
Yep. And I think their big thing is that you can actually receive events from any kind of provider. So it's just a nice, it's another generalized thing on top of a platform's. I'll be very curious to see how the platforms shake out after the next three or four years.
Growing field too. Like, there are definitely the main players, but God, they can use so much improvement, especially their UIs. It's a big deal. Like, if you're setting this up for the first time, you go on their website, you see this dashboard, and you're just like, what do I do? I don't want to talk about UI too much, but I think with cloud, it's specifically important to help you understand what you're doing.
Yeah,
at least for the first time.
If you're a front-end developer who's never spent time inside any type of back-end thing or node stuff, or you've never really deployed non-static applications, I think going into these experiences can be really overwhelming. The first time I went to Azure or even IBM Cloud, and I hadn't really done much server stuff, I was just bamboozled. It's like, where am I? What am I doing? What do these words mean? Which is why it's nice to have tutorials like Drasner's, which kind of walks you through, you should click this button.
Yeah.
This gets you there. Azure's interface is a little tricky to get through.
There's just a lot in there.
There's a lot of stuff there.
But also AWS.
Yes.
It's like famous for that.
Yes. AWS, yeah, takes some time to get through. So AWS is one of those things that it's so powerful and there's so many things. And everyone uses it, so you kind of assume that you have to use it too. But for many people, it's maybe overkill, maybe overkill. I personally use this thing called Netlify for most of my stuff now.
And we will have a show on that soon.
Right. but that's not serverless. Any other big takeaways from serverless that you ran into?
Serverless as a concept is awesome. I really, really like the idea, and I like how well it integrates with other APIs now, like Stripe and Slack and Twilio. Like, that's like the new trend now, that you have an API that integrates well with serverless. We're probably going to see a lot more tutorials too, I think, coming out that show this kind of integration. It makes sense because you're paying less, you're only paying for what you need, and you don't have to manage servers, which can get tricky.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that my biggest takeaway was I learned about Azure for sure from Sarah's blog post. I learned about the Stripe API. And then I'm surprised at the standard lib thing. Like, I enjoyed using it. So maybe I'll dig into that a little bit more. But I don't know. It wasn't as complex as I thought it would be.
I think framing it as functions as a service is really smart, because that's literally what it is. You're writing a function in a cloud service. And opposed to deploying an entire Node application to host that function, you're just deploying that function. So
yeah,
with hearing it as...
It's not even serverless. Like people say like quote unquote serverless.
Yeah, yeah. So. There is a server somewhere, but you're not deploying a server. And for me, I think that's what I'll take away, because I have these some kind of side projects where I deploy a server just to do five functions, more or less. And now I may look into some of this. One of the things that's kind of tricky for a hobbyist developer like myself is that hosting a Node application in many clouds is free. And this will not be free after a certain point. And so there's some give and take.
That's if it picks up, like if a lot of people are using it.
That's true. Yeah. So there's like this weird cost thing in my mind that because I used to build applications just for fun and never had to monetize it. I never really wanted to think about cost. But now as you kind of think of, you know, am I making a business out of it or something? Cost becomes a thing. And
yeah,
if you are paying for Node space somewhere, I think serverless functions will make it cheaper for you, especially if it's just a lightweight Node layer.
I think that this makes the most sense with e-commerce specifically, because like if you're paying per transaction for Stripe, you're also making money per transaction that you're paying for. With something like Slack, that's less true because anybody could use it and it might be on you. But I guess like that would be up to the company to decide. And if you have just a Node server running and you're like continuously pushing and like accessing it for Slack functions, that probably makes more sense for that. But I think things like Twilio, any services, any payments, serverless makes more sense.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see more and more examples. For me, the space is still completely new and I don't know enough about it. I'm excited to keep digging around, and I think I'll keep hunting around for some more tutorials, and I'll post those up, I guess, as we find them.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think more tutorials would mean better content out there because people will understand the space more and use it more.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with you. I think that it's an interesting idea. I think use case is really important here, which is why we kind of focus on e-commerce, because that's a great use case for serverless. But
One final use case I mentioned earlier is that oftentimes if you're spinning up a static website and you need to submit a form somewhere and you don't know where to store it and you want to store it in your own database,
mm-hmm.
If you're a front-end developer, this is a pretty classic example, and that might be a good use for serverless.
What about Firebase? Because then it's like you don't even have to think about setting things up.
Also a good idea.
Database. We should do a show on Firebase.
We should do a show on Firebase. I've actually just recently done something with Firebase, so I'm once again familiar with it. So
okay, I did a thing recently too. Yeah, let's. Anyway, this is our planning / recording. I think we're at the top of the show. We hope that you learned something. Try out serverless functions, I guess. Go through some of the tutorials, I think, would be a great start because they all allow you to have free accounts just to try it out. And we'll have all those in the show notes. We also want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Datadog. If you need any sort of monitoring for full stack applications, check them out. Also, remember that you can get a free t-shirt if you start a free trial. Go to datadog.com/toolsday. So you can get your free t-shirt and free trial, which is kind of nice. Datadog.com/toolsday. Yay, look, it's our podcast in the URL there. So thank you for listening. And if you want to show us some love also, please rate, comment, all those good things on iTunes or whatever podcast session listener you use. And we'll be forever grateful. Or share with a friend, even better, because that's how people hear about Tools Day. So check us out. We're now on the Spec FM network. You can find us there. You can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/toolsday. And if you really want to show us some love, we do have a Patreon for individual supporters. It's patreon.com/toolsday, TOOLSDAY. And we'll see you next time.